tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor, and Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute is here to help me understand the Americas as we approach an American election, but also very much concerned about things that can be shaped by policy with regard to the Americas in general. What do you have in mind, John? Fentanyl. I come immediately to a headline in Reuters in these last days about fentanyl. U.S. sanctions Mexican cartel on fentanyl, according to the Secretary of the Treasury, Yellen, Janet Yellen, issues China guidance to banks. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen announced new sanctions on leaders of a Mexican drug cartel involved in trafficking fentanyl and its precursor elements into the U.S. The Secretary also mentioned that China is part of this chain, the precursor element coming in from China. Professor, the fentanyl story has remained constant now, all through the first term of Mr. Biden's administration. And I believe it was right in front of you as you left the Trump administration ended in 2021. Is this a story that requires China more than Mexico? In other words, are we sanctioning the Band-Aid and not what made the cut?
Well, John, this certainly shows the importance of multidimensional international cooperation, because it involves and it requires cooperation between the United States and Mexico and China and other actors. And also not only DEA, but other entities such as Treasury, as we see here. As you noted, the two major groups that have been importing fentanyl into the United States from Mexico are the two Asia-connected, international-connected cartels, Sinaloa and Jalisco Nueva Generacion. But as the latest action by Treasury points out, too, you also have other groups involved in the mix, including the residual elements of what used to be known as La Familia Michoacana, or also the Knights Templar organization. But what it also shows is the degree in which you have a piece of it, which is the willingness of the Chinese government to cooperate with respect to controls over fentanyl and the precursor chemicals. Again, when I had responsibility over international narcotics and law enforcement, this was something that we worked heavily and I think got some cooperation from the Chinese, albeit reluctantly. But it also shows the importance of cooperation on the Mexican side. In some of the dialogue with the Mexicans, there was initially some question of whether fentanyl is actually produced in Mexico or not. But indeed, the pill presses for fentanyl, it's no longer shipped directly from Wuhan to the United States, but it's imported oftentimes through places like Sinaloa and then smuggled very easily into the United States. And so you have to have that Mexican cooperation. But as you also pointed out, it's not just a matter of stopping physical flows or disrupting various groups, but there are important things that financial institutions can do. And so, again, it's a matter of not just going after the movement of vehicles, but it's also a matter of saying, okay, if you see evidence of these organizations that appear to be purchasing things from China into Mexico by mail, but their role as pharmaceutical organizations in Mexico make it that relationship doesn't make sense. Maybe you need to look at these a little bit more, especially attention to what is called the dark net, the way in which people anonymously purchase from China into Mexico and elsewhere. And also, if you see certain profiles of concern of chemical companies financially out of China in Hong Kong, you might want to kind of keep an eye on those financial transactions. So it really requires multidimensional, financial as well as movement. Mexico, as well as China, as well as other countries, in really trying to manage this complex problem that killed over 100,000 Americans last year in terms of overdoses by fentanyl and other substances.
What is your measure of AMLO's time in office, the 6 years? Was the fentanyl story addressed directly, or was it left to drift? Is it a U.S. problem and not a problem for Mexico? I do not know. That's why I asked this general question.
Well, I would say, John, that AMLO is a mixed story. He certainly continued cooperation in certain areas, certainly cooperation on the migration, which he understood was very important both to President Trump and President Biden. There was some degree of cooperation on drugs, including fentanyl, although AMLO's posture of avoiding significant operations against some of the cartels in Mexico raised a lot of eyebrows, especially an apparent reluctance perhaps to front attack some parts of the Sinaloa cartel. In addition, his 2020 security law, which really made it very difficult for the United States, especially the DEA, to continue the level of cooperation we had previously had. Although cooperation in general continued, some of the counter-drug cooperation, I would say, was impeded. In addition to that, in the sense that violence in general with AMLO's reorganization of the Mexican security forces had expanded his greater use of the army, some difficulties in his attempt to transform the National Guard into the principal security force. But beyond that as well, you had a number of other questionable policies that had to do with his posture towards commercial transactions with the United States and issues like GMO corn. You had difficulties in his management of energy, wanting to channel all energy, especially clean energy, through federal organizations like the CFE. His privileging of Pemex over the private sector with respect to oil, all of which caused some problems for U.S. and other investors. Some regional policies that were also less than helpful for the United States. And so it's a very important relationship. It's one where there has been a continued effort to maintain that relationship. But the question now, as the Sheinbaum administration comes in, is to what degree will she continue some of those international policies, some of those trade policies and the security policies that AMLO has adopted, or to what degree will she move in a different direction? And in the process, what are the ways that she may work more with the United States in the security and other dimensions, and to what degree will things continue as they've been before?
Venezuela, either administration, either Mr. Trump's or Mr. Biden's, is going to have to deal with a country that's increasingly bold. There's an election at the end of July. Mr. Maduro is expected to retain his office. However, an announcement here that has to be dealt with, because we're looking for how is it that the opposition is doing so well in the polls. And yet, Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro and seven other candidates for the July election signed an agreement to respect the results. The country's main opposition abstained, saying the government had already breached an existing deal. We already know, Professor, that Venezuela ruled out Ms. Machado, who is the opposition's choice in a primary to run against Maduro. And that opposition party, even though it's substituted a mild-mannered accountant, Mr. Gonzalez, I believe his name is running 40 points or 30 points ahead in the polling that's done in Venezuela. And yet now we have the Maduro regime insisting all the parties, and I was unaware that there were so many running, all the parties respect the results, except the opposition says we won't. What's going on? What's the game here, Evan?
Well, John, this is part of Maduro's kind of continuing multidimensional game to essentially set the conditions for a rigged victory for his part, but also leave open the possibility of just canceling the elections outright if necessary. And so basically what you have, the real opposition here, the candidate endorsed by Maria Corina Machado is, as you alluded to, Edwin Gonzalez. And the vast majority of Venezuelans understand that. Indeed, Gonzalez has an estimated 50 percentage point lead over Maduro. Not 50 percentage points of the polls, but 50 percentage points more than Maduro. What you also have is a number of kind of also-ran candidates who are more or less loyal to Maduro and who were kind of orchestrated to create the illusion of a democratic space. And so, you know, kind of the seven dwarfs, if you will, basically Maduro and a number of candidates said, okay, let's commit ourselves to respect the results, whatever they are. Now, Maduro, if he is planning on rigging the elections, which is very possible given his behavior in the past. So basically, he would be looking to lock the opposition into saying, OK, if the, you know, as I rig the election, you are committing in advance to respect the results of the election, which I have rigged. And so Gonzalez very intelligently said, no, we're not signing up to that. And also pointed out that you've already violated even the things that you've agreed to since the Barbados Accords. You've already violated your commitment to allow international observers from the European Union. You've restricted what the Carter Center observers, who are still apparently coming in, can do. You've basically continued to persecute and even jail leaders of the opposition, including six who are still holed up in the Argentine embassy in Caracas, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, given that you have violated from the very beginning, going back to Maria Corina Machado, and continue to violate on a daily basis your democratic commitments, you know, essentially, we are not that naive to sign up for committing to accept the results of an election, which by all likelihood you will rig if you let it happen at all.
So what we're seeing here is the preparation for a stolen election, or an election that was always a sham. Is that correct, Professor? It was never meant to be honest.
Exactly. And this is kind of the latest maneuver, which is please commit in advance to accept the results of an election, which I am about to steal.
We need some good news. And I think I have something. It's not a great deal, but given the context, Buenos Aires, Reuters. Argentine President Milei's twin reform bills will head to Congress one last time for a final vote. Little risk of failure. The key question is whether the president, Mr. Milei, will be able to add back articles watered down in the Senate. The libertarian leader's sprawling basis bill ranges from plans to privatize state entities to boosting private investment. Has already been approved in general terms in both Congress chambers, along with a separate twin fiscal package. At one time, this was all called omnibus, but Reuters is confusing to me with all these dependent clauses. Is this as good a news as it looks? They've got a picture of Milei smiling, so it suggests that I should regard this as positive. Is it, Professor?
It was, John. It was a important, I would say, necessary step. It certainly doesn't get Milei out of the woods, but it would have been really bad news if he hadn't gotten through this at least watered down version of the bill. Essentially, you have a very powerful presidential system in Argentina, even to the point where it allows the president to take certain actions with the support of one house of Congress. And then basically you need to go back and cancel the actions the president has taken with both houses of Congress. And so in that context, you know, as you alluded to, what was called the omnibus bill, which makes certain expansions of powers the President Milei needs with respect to the ability to privatize companies, with respect to certain presidential initiatives to lead the economy. Again, he had made a lot of compromises. He actually has a new chief of staff, and it was arguably that it was actually the stewardship of that new chief of staff that really kind of helped smooth this through at the end. But the difficulty is Argentina is in a delicate situation where the things that Milei has done in managing the formal dimensions of the economy, he's done very well. I mean, he's brought balance of payments under control. He's brought deficits under control by cutting spending, by managing the exchange rate and other things. He has managed to really get the financial situation under control. However, the thing that he cannot do is get private sector investors to come back in. I mean, we've seen private consumption has shrunk by 6.7% in the last period. Public consumption, reflecting the shutdown of much government spending and infrastructure spending, is shrunk. But the real issue is, can you get investors to have the confidence to start investing again in Argentina? And to do that, you need not just presidential fiat, you you need essentially the confidence that there is a legal congressional framework that creates a solid basis that, you know, that these policies are can continue, the president can be successful. And so for Milei to at least have the passage of this bill that gives him a little bit of additional authority and shows a legislative achievement, at least smooths the way for some investor confidence to begin, you know, thinking about reinvesting in Argentina, creating jobs and getting Argentina past the difficult days that it's living.
Is it an opportunity to say that he's learning how to manage the politics of the legislature? Is that too positive, or is that something we can conclude here?
It is. His party, La Libertad Avanza, of course, has a very small segment of both the houses. And so he actually has to rely on both his center-right allies as well as others to kind of go along with these legislative proposals to get anything done. He not only had it lost a number of important prior votes, but, you know, a certain part of the conflictivity that he has had has made things difficult. And so it appears that between his new chief of staff, between his legislative team and other things, he's at least beginning to learn to kind of how to maneuver within the Argentine Congress a little bit more effectively than he has previously.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, The Tragedy of Haiti. Next, I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
She's been thinking about this sleepover all week, but I think about her food allergies all the time. Fortunately, her doctor prescribed Xolair, omalizumab. It's proven to significantly reduce allergic reactions if a food allergy accident happens.
Xolair 150 milligrams is a prescription medication used to treat food allergy in people 1 year of age and older to reduce allergic reactions due to accidental exposure to one or more foods. While taking Xolair, you should continue to avoid all foods to which you are allergic. Don't use if you are allergic to Xolair. Xolair may cause a severe, life-threatening allergic reaction called anaphylaxis. Tell your doctor if you ever had anaphylaxis. Get help right away if you have trouble breathing or if you have swelling of your throat or tongue. Xolair should not be used for the emergency treatment of allergic reactions, including anaphylaxis. Xolair is for maintenance use to reduce allergic reactions, including anaphylaxis, while avoiding food allergens. Serious side effects such as cancer, fever, muscle aches and rash, parasitic infection, or heart and circulation problems have been reported. Please see Xolair.com for full prescribing information. Ask an allergist about Xolair. This is an advertisement for Xolair paid for by Genentech and Novartis.
By the end of another busy day, with commuting and after-school pickups complete, it could feel like you've driven halfway across Ohio. For fuel rewards members at Shell, that running around translates into savings at the pump. Earn rewards on fuel, snacks, dining out, and more. Earn 10 cents per gallon off when you reach platinum status, with opportunities to stack rewards for even more savings. Visit fuelrewards.com/join25 and sign up today. At participating merchants and Shell locations, limit 20 gallons. Restrictions apply. Visit fuelrewards.com for more information.
What does Zyn really give you? Not just smoke-free nicotine satisfaction, but also real freedom to do more of what you love, when and where you want to do it. Why bring Zyn along for the ride? Because America's number one nicotine pouch opens up all the possibilities of right now. With Zyn, you don't just find freedom, you keep finding it. Find your Zyn. Learn more at Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.